California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil, and tonight we got a special guest, candidate for State Senate District 17. Michael Oxford is joining us tonight. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So you get the honor of being the first inaugural guest of 2024, the first candidate running. So congratulations on being the first candidate on the podcast in 2024. First off, before we jump into anything, why don't you introduce yourself, tell our listeners who you are, a little bit about yourself.
My name is Michael Oxford. I'm born and raised in San Jose. I live in the Santa Cruz Mountains now. I'm a tradesman of 18 years, audio video guy, and I've been canceled. I got fired for refusing to wear a mask back in February of 2023 on a job site, and it turned into a big giant thing because I made a video about it. It went viral, and I ended up on Tucker Carlson.
So I think a lot of people can empathize with you because during that time, it felt like everybody in California was, if they went against sort of that narrative of what was being pushed during COVID at that time, you were effectively being canceled. You couldn't stand up. You couldn't have a voice. There were a lot of people pushing back on you. So what just prompted you to just say, you know what, I'm not listening to this narrative. I'm going to take a stand and stand up for what I believe in. Wow. So that makes it even more, I think, like, ridiculous that it was February 2023, like the state of emergency was almost over at that point. And they're still asking you to wear a mask at that time.
Yeah.
Right.
It's insane. His reasoning was, I guess San Francisco was saying that, he was saying that San Francisco would shut down the job site if they got, I think, 3 COVID cases, and they already had 1. And this is what pissed him off. He goes in this big, long thing about how they're going to shut the job site down if they get 3 COVID cases. They've already gotten 1. And then when he stopped and looked at me, I was like, okay, what does that have to do with me wearing a mask? And that just set him off. He just walked away, called my boss, immediately got a phone call. So that set him off.
So now moving on to here we are, 2024, almost a year later since that, and now you're running for state senate. What was the impetus for you to decide, I'm going to run for state senate?
I've been sort of looking at it for a while, and I don't have a big grand reasoning of why I did this either. It was, yeah, it was what I talked about earlier, where I had that moment where it was like, I was turned down. You know what I mean? The moment I decided was when I was turned down by a local company here. There's, I won't put them on blast, but it's a local company in the town that I live in, and it's a Christian organization, and they needed an audio video supervisor. And this is a position that I was way overqualified for. You know, I was the head guy at Apple. I was the head guy at eBay. I was the direct, I was the direct installer for tech executives that you know the name of, you know, big, gigantic jobs, millions of dollars. I go to the interview, everything goes great. And like everybody else, they ghosted me, just like everybody else, not even a call back. And, you know, I just, it was, it's defeating. It's demoralizing when you get repeatedly turned down after interviews go great. You have a great resume. It's demoralizing. So I was sitting here after just realizing this company's not going to call me back again. And I said, you know what? This is a cultural issue. And the only way to affect change on a dramatic level is to get on a platform, start talking about it, and try to affect change from the top up. So that's okay. Let's start looking at the options. And I was looking at either state assembly or state senate. And I just decided for senate because John Laird is such a turd. It's really.
Well, let's talk about your opponent, John Laird. What is your opinion on him? I don't know too much about him. I like to try and keep up on all politicians, but I'm assuming because of your district, and just for people who need to know, like, where District 17 is, can you kind of detail like where District 17 is, and that may give people a better idea of like what kind of Democrat he is? So even though you're running a deep blue district, you said it's worth it to me to fight this fight and kind of stand up in this district and kind of raise my voice, right? Well, one thing I always tell my listeners is if you want to change California, you're not going to change it by electing a congressman. You're not going to change it by whoever wins in the White House. You're going to change it by electing your state senators and your state assembly. And I think it's so crucial that it looks like we lost them for a minute, but we'll come back. I'll just vamp right now. And the point is that we have to have people who stand up and talk about these things in these races, because otherwise, you know, no one's ever going to hear an alternative point of view. And I think we need to get more people who are willing to take on this and fight in these deep blue districts. Looks like we lost Michael for a second. Hopefully he can hop back on in a minute. But yeah, there's some of the things I'm looking at his platform just before he hops back on. Get fentanyl off the streets, get gender ideology out of schools, restore parental rights and education, save women's sports, medical bodily autonomy, restore doctor-patient confidentiality, constitutional carry, big fan, okay, like that, repeal the gas tax, lower income taxes, sell and privatize the high-speed rail project, fund the police, defund the NGOs robbing us blind, enforce sidewalk camping laws, no more free fentanyl needles, deport illegal immigrants who are caught committing crime, water infrastructure, audit the state, and make theft illegal again. So it's definitely an uphill battle in a district like this, that is deep blue. Looking at the 2020, 64%. So 64% did go to John Laird. That's actually a lot closer than I would have expected in such a district. It did actually go to just a couple of years ago. It did go out to a runoff of Democrat versus Republican. So there is a possibility for a Republican to even get in there, which is really kind of crazy to me that you can get someone in there. But yeah, still waiting for Michael to hop back on. I think he's having some issues with his maybe his browser or something that was happening. It's okay. We'll cut this out in post. So that's the great thing about this, is we can cut this out in post after the fact. Meanwhile, hold on. We got a message. Okay, just sent him a message. Sometimes these things happen. This is the problem with doing a live show. Sometimes these things do happen. I'm seeing excellent condition over here on YouTube. Everything looks fine. But yeah, as we were saying, it's pretty surprising that this actually did go to a Democrat and Republican race at the end of the day, because usually a lot of these cases, you get Democrat and then you get Democrat light. You get like a moderate Democrat and then you get like an extreme Democrat. So. Just looking up, let's look up John Laird, because he's got a run as well. So let's see what his site says. Let's see. Senator John Laird. John Laird was sworn in as a state senator December 2020. So he's a brand new state senator. So he hasn't been around for a while. So before we lost connection, what I was saying was, even though you said it was, I was actually looking it up. It was 64% that John Laird won by, which I was surprised also that he was facing off against a Republican in a jungle primary in California. It's odd that even happened. Usually that doesn't happen. It's usually Democrat versus Democrat. But I think it's so important to have people like yourself running in these local elections. Because like you said, it gives people that alternate voice, and otherwise people don't hear these alternate points of view. And without that, they don't know, you know, they're always so inundated by the one party rule of Democrats. So it's nice to see on the local level, people who are willing to take up the mantle, even if it's a tough slog, it's a deep blue district, to at least let their voice be heard. So I applaud you for taking up the mantle and running with it.
Well, thanks. I don't feel like I'm doing anything noble. It's just, yeah, it's either this or leave, and I'm not leaving. So
I was going over some of your platform while you were off. So let's go through it and talk about your plans to kind of implement these different issues. Fentanyl has got to be the biggest thing in California. It's the biggest scourge that I don't think people are talking about. here in California and how deadly it is. We did a whole episode on it. Talk to me about your platform and your plans to get fentanyl off the street.
Well, it's more than just fentanyl now too. It's that Trank crap it kind of seems to be replacing fentanyl. And before I even get into how to get it off the street, but I mean, have you noticed that a lot of these fentanyl addicts have like festering wounds, like giant open wounds on their legs, their feet, that kind of thing?
Mm.
Have you seen this?
Yeah. It's sad.
It's Trank. It's because this fentanyl is like cut with this horse tranquilizer. And I have a friend who is very familiar with this horse tranquilizer. She's like, yeah, horses have like tons of muscle mass and humans aren't, their bodies can't handle it. So it's almost like a skin necrosis type thing. It starts eating itself and they keep doing it. So Prop 47, I had no idea how bad Prop 47 was. You know, everybody knows that, well, most people know that it reduced stealing $950 worth of merchandise from a store. It made that a misdemeanor. And district attorneys don't prosecute misdemeanors in California. So it essentially decriminalized that. Also in Prop 47 was it allowed open air drug use. It says if you read the bill, it says decriminalizes use of most drugs, and that, and like public use of most drugs. Well, apparently that included fentanyl because they do not arrest people for using fentanyl. You could essentially use fentanyl wherever you want on the streets. So they decriminalized it, the use of it. So that's one thing. And then you have the whole sanctuary state policy. I focus on San Francisco because it's kind of, San Francisco and LA are pretty much the worst of the problems. And you have fentanyl problems in every single city, but in San Francisco specifically, do you remember Chesa Boudin, the previous district attorney before Brooke Jenkins came in? Well, there's that famous, it's sort of famous, video of him talking about the fentanyl dealers in San Francisco, how a lot of them are from Honduras. And what he says is these fentanyl dealers were trafficked here. They were human trafficked here. And they are essentially made to sell fentanyl on our streets, or the cartel people will hurt their family back home. So he says essentially in this video, yeah, we just got to keep letting them deal fentanyl on our streets. So we already are a sanctuary state where we don't deport people, even after they've been arrested for severe crimes. You know, arrested with the drugs on them. You know, you got a backpack full of drugs, a scale, money. Pretty clear. You know, you can determine that person's guilt pretty easily, pretty quickly, if you run them through the system quickly. Well, then you determine that they're here illegally and they're let out on the street to go right back to whoever they get the fentanyl from. And they're just right back doing the same thing before. You get people that are, it's a revolving door of drug dealers. Hardcore drug dealers. These aren't like low-level guys selling pot. You know, they're not selling 20 bags of pot on the street. These are fentanyl dealers that are selling fairly large quantities, picking up large quantities from highly organized organization. And the worst part, when you really think about it, since all of this stuff's been decriminalized, a lot of people are really upset with all the fentanyl use, all the drug dealing. Everybody knows who these fentanyl dealers are, people on the streets. Well, they want them gone. If people were to go out and handle these fentanyl dealers themselves, the cops would protect the fentanyl dealers. We literally have a situation in San Francisco where using fentanyl on the streets is legal. Dealing fentanyl on the streets is legal. And if a private citizen tries to do anything to those fentanyl dealers, not only they got to worry about the dealers hurting them, they got to worry about the cops coming after them. At what point do we ask, is San Francisco government being completely run by the cartels? Oh, also, you no longer need to be a United States citizen to be a police officer in San Francisco. So think about all these things working together. Open air use of fentanyl is legal. Dealing fentanyl is legal. It's legal to be here illegally. And you no longer need to be a United States citizen to be a cop. if citizens go and try and take care of the fentanyl dealers on their own, they're going to get, the fentanyl dealers will be protected by the cops. Like, wrap your brain around that. Like, it's madness. This isn't like I have some genius plan to get rid of fentanyl and get fentanyl off the streets. I don't have a genius plan. This is very simple stuff. Deport the fentanyl dealers when you arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Deport them. Don't allow people to do fentanyl on the streets. Arrest them. 30-day detox. We could talk about record expungement with, you know, the completion of certain programs. We could talk about work programs, all that liberal social justice-y stuff. We can talk about it. You can't do fentanyl on the streets. You can't do it. We can't allow this anymore in front of kids. Yeah. So there's very simple things that we could do to at least start fixing this problem. But nobody from the progressives, Democrats, nobody even wants to take the tiniest first step. Everything is chopped off at the knees. Every time there's any sort of person that wants to put together a real solution, it's axed. At a certain point, you have to ask, are they trying to actively destroy this state? And San Francisco is the prime example. Everything they do makes something worse. It's destroying the middle class. It's destroying small business. Companies are closing down, leaving San Francisco, grocery stores, retail stores. At what point do you have to ask, is this all on purpose? It's madness, man. So, yeah, sorry. I get worked up when I love San Francisco so much. It was such a huge part of my childhood. I'm from the Bay Area, born and raised. I used to take Caltrain up to San Francisco and go hang out with my buddy Lauren when I was like 15 years old. My dad didn't worry about it. I'd take Caltrain as a 15-year-old by myself up to Oakland. My dad didn't know what I was doing all weekend. We were skateboarding around, smoking pot, you know, doing dumb shit. And there's no way a parent would let their kid take the train from San Jose to San Francisco and just spend the weekend with their buddy. This is before cell phones too. So what's happened to this state, Northern California, the Bay Area. It's broken my heart. Did you see the thing where, what's his name? That food reviewer. Sorry. I got all Keith Lee, yeah. So he comes here, and that broke my heart because he pointed something out that just never clicked in my brain. I didn't realize it until he said it. He said, it gives me goosebumps. He says, the Bay Area is not a place for tourism right now. He said that, my jaw dropped on the floor. I said, he's right. Oh my God, he's right. Never in my life has the Bay Area not been a place for tourism. Are you kidding me? San Francisco, the Santa Cruz Mountains, the Redwoods, Napa, Oakland. Oakland's beautiful. All the glorious, magical things that the Bay Area has to offer. We're no longer a tourist destination. It's too dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I have a soft spot in my heart for San Francisco as well. My grandfather lived there for a long time. I used to visit there when I was in college a lot. I love the city. And even friends I know who are dyed-in-the-wool Democrats now even say, they're like, I don't go to the city. If I go see a Giants game, I get in and I get the hell out. I go watch the Giants, I come out. I don't hang out. I don't go anywhere in the city. And the problem, I think you're touching upon something that I've always said on this podcast. When it comes to doing fentanyl in the streets, it's like California forgot. There's a certain standard of society that they've just completely forgotten, which is like, we, to live in a civilized society, there are certain things that, unwritten rules, just as human beings in the 21st century, we've realized you don't do drugs in the street, public intoxication. I mean, this stuff that it's just, you don't do this in front of kids. You don't have open air drug markets. You just don't have this. And California seems to just turn a blind eye to it and just say, it's fine. It's okay. Let it happen. We're not going to prosecute them. We're not going to send them to jail. We're not going to do anything about it. But I think they're starting to feel the heat now, Democrats, which is why they're rushing to this idea of like conservatorships, where they're grabbing people off the streets and throwing them into mental institutions. That's going to be coming soon.
What mental institutions, though? We don't have any.
they're going to find some place. They're going to find some facilities. That's their whole plan is. They're going to basically have someone apply for a conservatorship and then force you into mental facilities.
This is where psychotic. You can... See, I didn't know that. Hearing that for the first time here. This conservatorship thing. This is a terrible idea. This is a horrible idea. It's the exact opposite of what I want to do. I want to bring back sanitariums. I want them privately run. But I also want this 30-day detox and some sort of work program. A lot of these people that are... Sorry if I cut you off, man. It's just that triggers me. The state having the authority to rip people off the streets and throw them in a mental institution? That's psychotic. That's why they shut down the sanitariums in the first place, because they got so far out of hand. Tons of the people on the streets of San Francisco, well, all over the place, that are doing fentanyl, addicted to fentanyl, were normal, regular, like high functioning people. Fentanyl is so terrible. People don't realize how addictive it is. There's guys that talk about, they're like, yeah, there's regular blue collar workers out here. They got families and stuff that will come out here one time, try fentanyl, and they are out here. They're just here now. It destroys people. There is a large percentage of these people on the streets that if they were given some tough love, people hate that term, thrown in the jail, given a hard 30-day detox, reoffend, thrown in, given a 60-day, whatever we work out, have a separate wing for detoxing, but the conservatorship, mental institution, state having the authority of ripping people off the streets, that sounds exactly like what totalitarian California Newsom would want to do. It's insane. That's madness. It sounds exactly what the left would want to do. The left are straight up authoritarians. And you triggered me, dude. I didn't know that.
It's something I've been following because it's an area of law that I practice. It literally is, when people ask me like, well, what is this? I'm like, to put it bluntly, it's basically they're bringing back the guys in white coats to just grab people off the streets and throw them into mental institutions. Democrats won't say it like that. They'll say it's like self-help and all that stuff. I mean, even the ACLU has come out strongly against this because of the violation of civil rights of just grabbing people and throwing them in institutions. But it's to them, it's the quickest solution so that they can just get them off the streets and people will say, oh, they cleaned it all up. But you didn't solve the root problem.
No.
And that's the thing about homelessness that a lot of Democrats will never, ever talk about. It's like, if you have the flu or you have a virus, like a respiratory virus, you're not going to cure it by taking DayQuil and cough drops. You may have to actually do something about like this virus that you have. That's what Democrats do. They spend billions of dollars on housing that doesn't help. They are now passing this conservatorship law to just get them off the streets, but they're not addressing the root causes, which is fentanyl. Drugs is a big one. And the other biggest one is that the affordability in California is just so out of whack. Everybody's living paycheck to paycheck. And if everyone's living paycheck to paycheck, you have to ask, well, why is California so expensive? We have to go, okay, well, it's because of the regulations. It's because of the taxes. It's because, you know, I have to pay more for groceries. I have to pay for this. I have to pay for that. Like, we Democrats don't want to address the root cause, which would be their policies that they say work. So hopefully that's something when you get into the state Senate, you can start to address, which is sort of these root causes of affordability when it comes to housing and I saw on your platform, repeal the gas tax, these taxes that just add up and end up being so burdensome to the poorest among us. And Democrats, who are supposedly the champions of the poor, end up hurting the poor by passing all these taxes and regulations. What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, you're triggering me again. They say they're the champions of the poor until you disagree with them, and then they will make you poor. They cancel people. Like, people don't... I didn't understand the extent of self-censorship that I was doing in the workplace or just out in the real world until I got canceled and I started talking about stuff, and so many people started coming out saying, I completely agree with you, so I can't say nothing, you know, because I'll get fired. Or, and I just realized, like, holy crap, like I strongly feel that the majority of people think everything's gone completely insane in California, but everybody's terrified to speak up because of this small percentage of radical, insane leftists that if you step out of line, they will ruin you. And regular people, regular old people like me, they will ruin you. I'm not trying to win an election. I'm trying to get California to look in the mirror. I'm trying to get Californians, people that I'm supposed to pander to get to vote for me. No, I'm looking them straight in the face and saying, you're wrong. And this is how you're wrong. And this is what's happened because you've been wrong. You need to admit that you were wrong and you need to get out of the way and let people that want to actually solve the problem clean up your mess. People in California need to have a very serious sit down. This is an intervention, what I'm doing. I am trying to get Democrats to vote for me because you guys used to like me. I'm from here. I grew up with you guys. And then all of a sudden, 2016 comes around and I'm this evil guy. What happened? I didn't change. You guys did. All this stuff is psychotic. We used to arrest people for dealing drugs. We used to arrest people for dealing pot. Now you can sell fentanyl. It's insane. We used to arrest people when they stole tons of stuff from stores. It's insane. Everything is insane, what we're doing. And now the crime, it's absolutely maddening. The fentanyl thing for me has, and the homeless thing has, it comes from a personal place. When I was 8 years old, my Uncle Dan jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and it ruined us. He was addicted to drugs, and back then we used to look at this problem and say, addiction's a problem. We need to address it. And now we look at it and say, addiction's not a problem. We need to accept it. I do not accept that. I do not accept that at all. I don't want to see anybody else jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge because they got monsters in their brain. You know, It's what we're allowing people to do is destroy themselves. It's sick. It's sick what we're doing.
I think you hit a good point, which is there is, I think in my mind, and this is just my opinion, that far left radical part of California is more of a minority than people think. And I think it's up to people like yourself who go out and campaign and do this, platforms like this, where people can kind of tune in and go, wait a second, I'm not wrong. I'm not crazy. Like, there are other Californians who think, yeah, we've gone a little nutty. Like, what's going on here? And I feel like there's people in the workplace who feel like they can't say anything. You know, if they're at school, they can't say anything. So I feel like that there is that vein of like, there's probably way more people who are more common sense, more moderate than they believe, who are out there in California. It just takes people like yourself speaking up about it and letting people know and like not being afraid to speak up and let people know about it. Otherwise, people do assume it's just a deep blue state and their voice doesn't mean anything.
Well, talking about the mentality of Californians and not speaking up because they're scared to, basically.
Yeah. And to just reiterate, I think there's more people who want to speak up, people who are afraid to speak up, but it takes people like yourself who go out there and campaign boldly to say these things. So people just go, okay, I'm not crazy. There are other people out there who think like this. And I think in California, there's actually a good large majority of people who think like this. It's just, we've gotten into this kind of like Stockholm syndrome of like, it's, you know, only Democrats can run California. We have to listen to Democrats. You know, people like Scott Wiener have to run the entire state and pass all the crazy bills. So I think there needs to be more people like yourself speaking up about this.
Well, it's also like if somebody has a conservative position and they want to talk about it, like, you're not supposed to talk politics in the workplace, right? But if you have one of those conversations you're not supposed to have, you have to do it in whispers if you're a conservative and you're trying to talk about a conservative stance that you have. Everybody starts talking really quietly and they're like, oh, I can talk to you about this. And everybody gets all happy. That's a problem because anyone who's a leftist has no problem screaming from the top of their lungs at work how much they hate Donald Trump, wearing super flamboyant stuff, talking about how they're going protesting this week. It's completely fine to talk about all the most radical leftist stuff in the workplace. It's completely fine to do that. And everybody in California has been conditioned to, if I have any sort of conservative belief, you might be a liberal and you might just think, I think maybe we should give people CCWs. I think people should be able to get their concealed carry permits easier. You say you're a liberal and you take that position. Or not even that. Say you're a liberal and you're like, I don't think we should allow people to camp on the sidewalk. Or I don't think we should be giving kids puberty blockers. You know, if you take any of those stances, if you're a liberal, you're kicked out of the club. You're ostracized from society. What's wrong?
So I was just finishing your thought, which was, you're right. And I always tell people, you can abandon California at your own peril, which is, if you abandon California, whatever happens in California is slowly going to make its way across the country. So, And this is a bigger argument, I think, anyway. If you want to stop this statism and radical leftism, you have to show you can stop it here in California. You know, prove right. Your point. Prove you can stop it here in California. Because if you can, it's the death knell for this sort of statism and leftism in California. Otherwise, if you're conceding, then you might as well just concede your arguments are not good enough to win anywhere. So going off your point before you were off about, don't give up on California, because if you give up on California, it eventually spreads to the rest of the country.
Yeah, and a lot of people try to make the argument of, pick your genocidal regime. A lot of people say, well, why didn't the people leave when they started seeing the writing on the wall? Pick your genocidal regime, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They try to make that comparison with California about how authoritarian it's coming and people got to get out of here because, a lot of people say like the whole 10 steps to genocide thing. I don't buy that. Because we got guns. I'm not saying people need to go start marching around with their guns. I'm not telling people need to start making an armed stand. But California can't go full fash authoritarian, going door to door trying to take people's guns. If they did that, there's going to be blood in the streets. So why are we running? Why aren't we making a stand? We have the First Amendment that's protected by the Second Amendment. And you're still telling me to run. Why are we doing this? Why aren't we standing up to the radical leftists that are destroying the state? Why would I run? I don't want to call anybody a coward, but that seems cowardly to me. To abandon your home? You love this place? Weren't you born here? And plus, I don't have the means to run. Where am I going to go? My whole social network is here. My friends are here. The small amount of family that I have are here. Where am I going to go? I don't have money either. Remember, I've been canceled. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not running. I'm going down with the ship, I guess.
Well, the one point that you brought up, and I think if you're looking at the tea leaves of California elections, and it's interesting to look at because most people will go in, they'll pull the lever for Democrats. But when you see propositions that are about raising taxes or anything like that, when they get voted down continually, you start to kind of scratch your head and go, wait a second. There's a conservative strain here in California, and people are just quietly voting against these propositions that raise taxes. So that should give some people hope that maybe out there there's more than we think of people who don't like taxes and they don't want more crime or they don't want to take out more bonds or something like that. So I think that should give people hope that these propositions continually get voted down.
Yeah, it should give people hope that there is a very large conservative element in California. The thing that is sort of a black pill is the further you look into California elections, the more horrible it gets. It's to say California elections are rigged would be a complete understatement. Have you looked into like all
I was just saying before you hopped off, and then we can kind of wrap up the episode, because I want to get your final thoughts before we end on the hour. I was talking about if you want proof of what you're talking about, there was that Judicial Watch lawsuit where they found, I don't know how many, a million voters in the LA voter rolls that they had to clean up that were just not. They were ineligible, they didn't live there, or they were dead. So it was a million voters in LA, which is an astronomical number. A million votes can swing a lot of races, especially in local elections.
There's not even a million people in my district. There's not even a million the population of my district is lower than a million people.
Yeah. So, yeah, as I was saying, it is a little too rife with the ballot harvesting, the mail-in ballots. And then you combine that with a lot of these voter rolls that are outdated, they don't have the correct names on them, stuff like that. you know, there is a possibility that these elections, they're not on the up and up, as you're saying.
I go farther. I got my tinfoil hat on. I just think they're straight up rigged, like not even close. Like there isn't. And they become more blatant with it. It's all you have to do is look. Just look. Just the DMV registering people to vote. Like, I mean, I keep saying the same things over and over, but the number one thing is the universal mail-in ballots. It's just, how can anyone think this is a good idea? Just everyone gets sent a ballot. Mm-hmm. And why? And, oh, we have a month to vote. A month.
Yeah.
And Gavin Newsom outlawed hand counting ballots.
Mm-hmm. New law this year.
There's so many things. It's, how can you say they're legitimate? It's such a more difficult argument to make that California elections are legitimate. You know,
mm-hmm.
like.
Well, with that said, before we have any more technical issues and we lose you one more time, I want you to kind of give your final pitch. With all that said about elections, let's talk about your election. Where can people go and find you and support you and learn more about you? And I would just like to say, I'd love to have you back. Hopefully we can get technical difficulties put aside next time. But tell people where they can go and support your campaign.
Yeah, so my campaign website is oxford2024.com. And you can hear all of my terrible opinions on the X platform. You can follow me over there. It's SC Mountain Goat over there at x.com.
And you also started a podcast.
Yeah, and I stream it on that. On X and on Rumble and on YouTube. It's called Cali Based. So we're on episode 110.
Wow.
That yeah. I just had Dr. Mary Tally Bowden on. I just had Ashton Forbes on. So yeah, some fun guests.
Ashton Forbes, why does that name sound familiar?
He's the dude doing the MH370, the Malaysia Airlines the flight that disappeared.
Hmm. Oh. Well, it's more science than we ever talk about on our podcast, so I'll definitely have to check it out. So Michael, thank you again. Apologies for the technical difficulties. Like I said, later in the campaign season, feel free to come back on. Hopefully we can get this all squared away and have you back on and talk more about this stuff. We barely scratched the surface of your platform. So anybody who wants to learn more about him, definitely go to oxford2024.com, support him, go on X. He's a good Twitter follow. He's got a lot of good insights that I've been enjoying ever since I started following him. So with that said, I like to end every episode same way I end every episode, which is make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, all that stuff helps with the algorithm, comment after this video is over. And the best thing you can do to share or help support this podcast, that's absolutely free, share it with a friend and let them know, like we talked about on this episode, you're not alone. You're not the only person thinking this stuff. There's a lot of people out there like us. So with that said, we'll see you on the next one. Later, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.